Welcome to Inside the Vault, Enterprise Bank's podcast series, where we talk about items of interest to the small business community. Today, I have Chuck Lai, President and CEO of Enterprise Bank, regular guest here on Inside the Vault. Chuck, welcome.
Good morning.
Yeah, so what we're going to talk about today is the SBA, and which is a program near and dear to our hearts here at the bank. We utilize the program a lot. Me personally, in a former life, I spent some time working for the SBA. So we wanted to talk a little bit today about, you know, how the SBA supports small businesses, how the bank uses that programs, their programs, and how we handle their programs differently than many other banks. So, you know, first of all, I want to make sure our viewers and listeners understand what the SBA is and what we're talking about. So generically, SBA is a federal government agency, was formed in 1953, and for many years did direct lending to small businesses as part of the federal government. But, you know, in the 70s, switched to a model where they leveraged the private sector banking community like Enterprise and provide credit support to banks and other non-bank lenders that lend to small businesses. So basically what it is a public-private partnership between the SBA, a federal government agency, and the lending community and banks. So for lack of a better description, it acts almost like the SBA supports a loan almost like a cosigner or a guarantor. Or, you know, you can consider them, you know, a collateral enhancement to the bank. But basically, in generic terms, you know, the bank looks at a small business financing request for either a startup business or an existing business that's expanding and determines, you know, if the loan makes sense, but it doesn't fit the bank's particular credit parameters, then, you know, the bank can obtain insurance or a guarantee from the government through the SBA to mitigate a portion of that risk. And that basically allows banks and other lenders to expand the number and types of businesses that they can lend to, you know, using a taxpayer-subsidized program. So this has been a program that, you know, the bank has used extensively since its inception, which is, you know, for those of you that are regular podcast viewers and listeners, we just celebrated our 25-year anniversary, you know, the program itself is a government program. It has lots of, you know, parameters around it that the bank has to comply with. But in terms of, you know, how banks use the program and the advantages that it provides not only to the bank but for the small business customer, we wanted to cover some of those items today. So probably the best place to start is – Chuck, from your perspective, from the CEO's desk, you know, why is the SBA such an important tool for our particular bank?
Well, when we formed the bank, we decided that we would focus on a niche that included startup businesses and businesses in distress. For traditional bank lending, you have the bank will underwrite the loan based upon a conservative cash flow analysis. So they want to see a history of being able to service the debt. Well, clearly, when you have a startup business, you have no history. And if the business is struggling, then they don't have a good history. And so that typical parameter is not going to get met, and the bank is not going to write that type of loan. SBA allows the bank to mitigate a lot of its risk. You know, the SBA is, when we say it's a government agency, but when you look at how it's funded and how it operates, basically part of the interest income we collect from the borrower goes directly to the SBA to, in theory, fund the insurance policy that they're giving us. And so it's all about risk mitigation. So when we get into something that doesn't have the historical traditional underwriting cash flow history, we look at mitigating the risk. Even though we think it's got a good chance of operating, we know if it goes under, we're going to lose money potentially if they don't have a lot of other collateral to put up. And what this does is it reduces that risk. So if our bank decides we'll take $50,000 worth of risk on a loan, and the loan is for $250,000 and there's no collateral, well, then we can't do the loan. But with a government guarantee and that might be 90%, sometimes 75%, that guarantee of the loss, you reimburse us for a loss if it occurs, pulls us back down to a risk level where we're willing to take that risk. So it's become, and always has been, an integral part of our business plan from a risk mitigation perspective, and allows us to help people we wouldn't normally be able to help.
So, you know, commonly SBA guarantees are employed in a few common circumstances, startups, or when you're relying on projections and you don't have that historical cash flow, Chuck, that you just mentioned. Probably the biggest reason that Enterprise Bank uses the SBA is when we have a collateral shortfall, because, you know, banks are always looking for a secondary source of repayment if, God forbid, the loan actually fails or defaults. So that guarantee from the SBA can be looked at as a quasi-collateral. But it might be some other lenders may use it because it's business in an industry type that's higher risk. You know, everybody talks about SBA being big restaurant lender into the restaurant industry, the hotel industry, those types of things. Or it could be, you know, it's a higher leverage transaction than what a bank would consider conventionally. You know, if someone wants to buy commercial real estate, typically it's 20 or 25% down with some of the SBA programs. Business owners can get in with a little less down, which is important for a lot of them that are, you know, limited financially or trying to preserve working capital. But the one thing that I wanted to make sure those viewers and listeners are aware of is, you know, the way the program is used and administered can vary significantly from institution to institution. If you look at the SBA activity in Western PA in recent years, you'll see a lot of SBA loans being done in Pittsburgh, Western PA, from lenders that aren't local to our market, aren't banks like Enterprise.
Right.
A lot of those are either national banks that don't have a presence here, but they lend with the SBA guarantee nationally. Some of them are non-banks that are licensed by the SBA. But those institutions don't always approach their SBA lending activities the way Enterprise does. We portfolio. We keep all of the SBA loans that we make on the bank's books for the life of the relationship. A lot of these other banks, take advantage of the ability to sell their SBA guarantees, which are government, you know, guaranteed credit obligations. They can sell those, get substantial income in the short term from that, but then those institutions lose a lot of flexibility with the customer.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, so I was interested in your take, Chuck, on, you know, why the bank has chosen not to sell our loans and why we want to maintain them in our portfolio.
Well, it's kind of simple. We care about the clients and we want to be able to help them when they're going through a rough time. I mean, almost every startup doesn't go as planned. So there's challenges, there's steps backward, and hopefully you're taking two forward, but there's typically some steps backward. A bank should be able to help somebody in that kind of a circumstance. And so we're routinely, somebody stumbles out of the gate, we may go interest only. We may help people with the terms, adjust the terms a little bit so that they can get back on their feet and have a chance to survive. If you sell in the marketplace, there's a bureaucracy to get permissions to do things. And truthfully, by the time you work through the bureaucracy, if you need to help somebody, they're already dead by the time you go through that process. I mean, so as a practical matter, you can't sell the loans and really help a client that gets in a tough situation. And that's why we keep them. And we are I don't know of another bank that keeps them. When you talk about somebody who like specializes in SBA lending, the premiums for selling the loans in the marketplace, the government guaranteed portion of the loans, is so large that it's, you know, financially a win for the banks to just write them and sell them, write them and sell them, write them and sell them. And, you know, when I'm in trade associations and people find out, you know, we do a lot of this and I say we hold on to it, they just look at me like, what is wrong with you? Well, the truth of the matter is we care about our clients, and that personal service concept is what drives us, not the bottom line. And that's not to say that we don't need a bottom line to be healthy. We right. do. But we can portfolio the loans, have a good bottom line, and have the flexibility to help people when we need to. And that's a big, big difference between us and other people.
And on the other side of the coin, you talked about having more flexibility when we own 100% of the loan in-house to work with businesses that are having difficulties. The other side of that coin is when the businesses get stronger and their credit profile no longer dictates needing that government guarantee, with us not having sold them, we can turn those into conventional loans without having to refinance them, have the borrowers incur new closing costs and new appraisals and all the good stuff that comes with new financing. You know, our MO is we want every SBA loan to be a conventional loan once it's an established track record.
Yeah. I mean, the existing market is very robust when it comes to selling SBA loans. And as you know, it's very lucrative. It's there in theory because it allows the bank liquidity to function in the market.
Aren't banks at record liquidity right now?
Yeah. I'm not allowed to use that kind of language here on the radio, but, you know, that's a bunch of bunk. I mean, honestly, there's some proper theory to it, but most banks don't have a liquidity problem, and that's not going to create a liquidity problem for them. So, you know, it's there because the discounts are so large and they make so much money on it.
Yeah.
And again, if you're they're placing that profit ahead of the ability to help their clients. Yeah. And it simply comes down to that. And yet they don't run around and tell any of the clients that, do they? Right. They just, well, the ones that go through a rough time find out the hard way.
Well, let's be honest. It was, you know, was not an issue for a lot of years when interest rates were low. But I think our listeners need to understand that, you know, these banks that sell their SBA loans and non-banks that sell their SBA loans, they get the highest premium for selling variable, pure variable rate loan structures, which didn't really hurt businesses for many years when our prime rate was less than half of what it is now. But what we've seen, and we're getting a lot of these requests coming to our bank now, is a lot of these SBA loans that were sold in the secondary market with variable interest rates have gone from 4% and 5% 2-3 years ago to 11% now. And that's really hurting cash flow for a lot of these businesses. And it's starting to kind of come to roost the danger of lenders and banks structuring for short-term fee income rather than viability.
You and I both know that while they were out pushing, and this is the SBA fintechs that are lending, and a lot of the banks that do SBA work, they had such a huge premium on doing a variable rate loan versus a much lesser of a premium if they did a fixed rate loan, and that income source pushed them in a certain direction, not what was doing what was best for the client.
Right.
And this is why, for me, these programs, people should think through these programs. You know, I mean, I'm certainly going, next time I go to trade association, three people are going to throw spears at me for saying this, but, you know, it's not right. It's not the way a government program should be set up. You're here to help the small business client. And, you know, having these kind of premiums in the marketplace that are so large that they drive you to do things that aren't necessarily in the client's best interest and the lender's borrower's best interest, it shouldn't be designed that way, because then that creates these disconnects where what's good for the bank in this case is not what's best for the client.
And one of the great benefits of using SBA versus conventional is SBA will allow the banks to do a little longer term financing than we could on a conventional basis, which, you know, results in lower monthly payments for a lot of businesses. But when you couple it with these variable interest rates that have gone through the roof, you have an issue. Plus, you have the issue of a lot of these lenders have financed, have not matched the use of the proceeds or the borrower's needs to the term of the loan.
Right.
They're maximizing what SBA will allow them to do. And I, as a business owner, could still be paying 20 years from now for a piece of equipment that was obsolete in 10. So, you know, you've got this interest rate issue. You've got this mismatch of pricing. We're finally starting to see the dangers of this type of loan structuring because of the interest rate and monthly payments going up in a lot of these loans that are sold. From near and dear to your heart, you know, you handle pretty much spearhead all the bank's collection and workout efforts. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how the bank has more flexibility in working through, you know, a collection, a workout, a default scenario when we have that SBA backing or other secondary sources of repayment?
Yeah, the bottom line is a bank has to operate in a safe and sound method. And that there's a fine line what's safe and sound when a company looks like it's going out of business. You know, they're there asking for help, and you're there trying to make a decision, am I throwing good money after bad? And in the regulatory environment that we all live in, I guarantee you the regulators are not privately motivating you to help somebody who is struggling. They're not. We've differentiated from some people because when we underwrite the loan, we're looking to get as much collateral as we can, sometimes more than what we need to actually be paid back. And the value of that comes about when somebody stumbles and needs help. Because, you know, if you grant a $200,000 loan and you have no collateral, you have $200,000 worth of risk. And if that person it looks like they're going down, but they think if they get another 20 grand, they can turn it around. You have to throw that 20 grand in there, and there's a high probability it all gets expensed right away the way the rules will be. On the other hand, if you had a $200,000 loan and you had $300,000 worth of good marketable collateral, well, then you got room to help somebody, because you've got $100,000 of cushion there between the $300 of collateral and the $200 of the loan. You've got room there. So if you might be inclined to give them an extra $20 because you still have $80 of cushion there. And that's why we typically structure loans that way, because it allows us to help people and still be able to go back to a regulator and say, hey, we're not cutting their knees off from underneath them when they need help, because we have plenty of this extra collateral to take care of us. And if they're willing, and a lot of those is it's a mutual discussion. You know, you're going to come in and say, well, I can give you the $20,000, but there goes another $20,000 of equity out of your house. Are you sure you want to take that risk? And if they say yes, well, then fine, because it's not hurting the bank. And again, but people have to understand, bank lending is not like investment banker lending. You know, when you're buying equity, it's a high risk. When you're making a bank loan, in theory, you're not supposed to be taking much risk at all. And that ties into this collateral, whether there's excess or whether there's not enough to cover the loan. That tells you what your risk really is. And so, we're kind of notorious for looking for extra collateral and mitigating that loss, whether it's through guarantees or extra, you know, business collateral or personal collateral, whatever we need to have there to protect the situation. But by having extra, then when you go through a rough time, we're able to make a decision to help versus not.
Yeah. And getting back to the SBA discussion, I mean, that is one of the basic tenets of SBA lending. You know, SBA is there when a loan is under collateralized. but it's not a replacement for taking available collateral.
Right.
Because this is a taxpayer subsidized program. So the owner or owners have to be at risk to the extent of real estate holdings and that type of thing before the SBA is going to put the taxpayer dollar at risk. So one of the big advantages that we have at Enterprise Bank is that, you know, we have the highest level of SBA lending authority that SBA provides. It's called, I mean, speaking to the choir, but preferred lending designation, PLP status that we have, which allows the bank basically to underwrite the loans, SBA guaranteed loans on its own, you know, from a credit perspective. Now, obviously, there's still, you know, SBA is still checking the eligibility requirements because, as I said, it's a government program. But as far as the credit decision, that's pretty much delegated to the bank. And we, you know, as a bank with you at, you know, running it, we have really built our expertise up from a staffing and education level to, you know, warrant that kind of authority on behalf of the SBA. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was an integral part of us being able to timely service a client's needs and have flexibility in what we do with the client. You know, if you don't have PLP status, then the SBA is going to approve the loan and you go through the bureaucracy of doing that, which can be an extended period of time. You know, at our house, we're kind of pride ourselves that, you know, we're going to get in and out in a week to make a decision. And now you might wait, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to close the loan because we're waiting for appraisals to come in or things like that where we're doing our due diligence. Yeah. But the credit decision from when we have everything to when it's made is a week. You can probably speak better to what that timing is with SBA if you're running through the SBA for that permission. So for me, the PLP status and the time savings and the flexibility that it gives us is really, really important.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit, Chuck. There's been some, you know, major changes in the SBA. Not just in the most recent year with regard to the flagship programs like we're talking about, but, you know, SBA went front and center. It was, I don't want to say little known product, but, you know, outside of commercial lending circles, not a lot of people knew about the SBA until the pandemic hit. And then they were tasked with delivering the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, which really elevated SBA's awareness in the public in general. And they handled a huge amount of those loans in a very short period of time, you know, when the pandemic hit. And since then, you know, they had their hands full, as did we in 2020, 2021, and even into 22 with dealing with those PPP loans and forgiving those. Last year, they really started focusing on making some changes to the long-term flagship programs, which are 7A, which is the guarantee program we've been talking about, and then the more niche program, 504, that we'll talk briefly about in a second. But you know, some of what's going on in the most recent 12 months with the flagship program is good, but could be bad. And what I mean by that, and I know you have some opinions on this from your work in the trade associations, you know, SBA appears to be trying to loosen some of the restrictions and parameters around their program to make it easier for lenders of all type to use. And I know the big concern that all of us as long-term SBA lenders have is, you know, are the fintechs going to start using the program with limited restrictions under these new rule changes and damage the program from a viability and subsidy perspective going forward? Can you talk about that?
You know, I have this underlying philosophy sometimes where each generation is stupid because they don't learn from history. And certainly the SBA program, if you look over its history, has migrated towards the bank structure that there is now, because the bank still, if it goes south, is on the hook for a part of the loss. Versus before, when they did direct lending, the government's on the hook for 100%. And that private industry being involved with that risk level caused the losses inside the program to be reduced dramatically. Having skin in the game always makes a huge difference. And in any program, that should be there. Now, in history, PPP history was a great example. I mean, the fintechs, there's an unbelievable amount of fraud that's taken place. I mean, and they're not set up to punish people for what they've done. And when you look at the type of organization that contributed to the majority of that fraud, that's the type of organization they're opening up lending to. You got to scratch your head and say, do you pay attention to reality at all, or do you just like throw taxpayer money down the toilet? And in this case, it's not taxpayer money. It's the banks that contribute, you know, that part of that interest income. Yeah. We pay the fees. That's what funds the operation. And so it bothers me knowing that these types of non-bank organizations have lost, you know, millions and millions of dollars and haven't operated the program the way, in a conservative way, the way the banking industry has. You wonder why people do things. And the truth of the matter is it's politics and buying votes, and that's what
always
we do.
Always seems to come back around.
It
to
always
that,
comes
it?
Back to that.
So, yeah, so the SBA, you know, in all the years now, I've been in SBA lending, both at the SBA itself and now at the bank for 30-some years. I have never seen a time like we're in now where the industry is at odds with the SBA. And not even just the industry, but even members of Congress are at odds with the SBA because of just what you said. We just came out of a few-year period of this PPP program where all these new lenders that never did SBA lending came into the fold, and now we're recognizing, or the SBA and the government's recognizing, all the fraud that took place because all this stuff is done online. You know, in our shop, we kick the tires and go out and visit every client we lend to. I don't know how you can homogenize small business loans.
Well, if you look back at our shop and our history, we had one that we believe was fraudulent. It was a loan that wasn't one of our existing clients. We basically funded all the PPP, and if you remember, while everybody's quote going home and working remotely or just staying at home, we're all here working
1 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly, trying to get money to people so they could survive. And when we took care of our existing clients, then we opened the door up for other people. And in this particular case, we had one come in, and after the loan, it was time for forgiveness. When we asked the questions, it was very clear this person just ignored and misrepresented everything that was going on. We had what I call a white and black case that we created the whole case for, and we turned it over to SBA. Nothing's ever happened. And
yeah, and there's a big debate in Congress right now about the collection efforts on these fraudulent loans. Yeah.
So there's no... You know, nobody seems to take responsibility for that side of things, and now you're opening up lending to lenders who struggled with this issue before because they don't know their clients as well as they should, and now you're opening up the door again to do it again, and you haven't even fixed the problem that you already have.
And we're not funding 7A loans with emergency money around the pandemic.
Right.
We're talking about the future of fee structures and cost to everybody else.
Sure, because if you have huge losses, then the premiums for the SBA premium that we charge in the interest rate is going to go up and become more and more expensive. And but again, you know how that is.
Right.
It's a political thing. I want dollars out in the marketplace and do whatever you need to do to get it out there to make me look good, and that's what I'm going to do.
Right. The other thing I wanted to talk about is what makes us a little different with our SBA lending than most banks is, you know, we use some of the niche products that SBA has made available for a number of years, but very, very few banks, particularly locally, take advantage of. that are great programs that we use all the time. Specifically, I'm talking about there's three programs under what SBA calls the cap lines umbrella, where we can do contract-specific financing. So if a client we're working on one right now where a client has a contract with the Navy, work they've done before, but the order size is much larger than they've ever dealt with, and they're upfront working capital needs to buy materials and fund the labor to fill the job, they can't support with their normal line of credit. So we can take that contract, finance those costs directly with an SBA guarantee, allows them to take on larger jobs that they otherwise couldn't with their current line of credit. We do those all the time. We're one of the few banks, I don't know of any other banks locally that are doing it. Similarly, we have, you know, working capital cap lines where we can provide larger lines of credit than we could on a conventional basis with an SBA guarantee, tying it to percentage of receivables and inventory. And then most recently, we've started re-engaging on what's called the Builder's Cap Line program. So obviously, you know, the housing market's in flux. Got to be careful about spec home construction, that type of thing. But SBA has a product that will allow us to get an SBA guarantee to help new builders, you know, get established. So some of those niche programs are, I think, you know, really rarely available in the market outside of us. Any comments?
Well, they're great tools. I mean, those kind of loans have very little collateral that's tangible. You know, real estate, when it's collateral, doesn't get up and disappear. Receivables seem to be gone the minute that you look at the paper. So it creates a risk, and it's a great, great program to mitigate that risk. And we use it extensively because of the value of what it serves for us and for the client.
Yeah, and last but not least, you know, the other SBA program. So the major SBA program is the 7A, of which cap lines we just talked about are all subsets. Those are bank loans with an SBA guarantee. The other major SBA program, which we've really embraced at Enterprise, is the 504 program. And big misconception in the market always has been that, you know, all SBA loans are used to support weaker businesses. 504 is a whole different animal. 504 is an economic development program. It's based on, you know, either job creation, retention, or certain economic development impacts that a project makes. That's a program where the bank does 50% of the project financing. The SBA, instead of guaranteeing a bank loan, actually guarantees a bond issue for up to 40% of the financing, and the borrowers can get in with as little as 10% down as an existing business. That's for very strong companies, and we use that as a competitive advantage at Enterprise all the time, because we're really comfortable being at 50% of the collateral. The borrower gets 40% of their project at a below market, up to 25-year fixed interest rate, and gets in with half of or more of what they would normally need to put down. So that's kind of been a flagship program for us. And you, as chair of the loan committee, you can talk about how much from a credit risk mitigation that program
does. Well, it's like it's a tremendous program, but you know, the one thing you have to look at for all these programs is the financial institution. And it's one of the reasons a lot of people don't use the SBA is the bureaucracy and the rules associated with all these types of programs. And as you well know, when it comes time to collect on a guarantee, they seem to be very good at finding any little thing that looks like it's the wrong way. And while we can laugh about that, that keeps a lot of banks out of the program. And instead of fixing that bureaucracy, educating the banks, working together as a team, what do? They then run to the fintechs or whatever to do lending when they're not equipped to do lending. And it's like two wrongs are going to make a right. You know,
right.
And so, you know, the one thing about all these programs is they're, you know, we do so much of it that we really stay on top of the rules. And
Which is not
close
always
attention.
Easy.
And it's, no, it's not easy. You're the one that's responsible for doing it most of the time. And so it's a heck of a challenge. But if those rules were simplified and, you know, there were some better education, publication, coaching with the banks, that they're the smaller banks that don't do that much of this, you can make a big difference. And that's, I think, where we've missed the boat in the directions. Because honestly, when I remember I recruited you to come with us from SBA, and at that point in time, things were very decentralized, unlike they are now. And you spent most of your time, because it's how I got to know you, educating people about the program and how the program worked. And you would basically hold their hand right through the process. And it developed a lot of activity. But we've deviated away from that now and centralized everything. And everything's with a policy and people don't know one another. And so you find somebody half checked the box instead of wholly checked the box. The next thing, they're not paying the guarantee. And then that bank's mad and they're out of the program. They won't do it again. And you get to where you are now. So that's why I think a lot of people, well, it's a tremendous program and it has unbelievable value for small business. You got to be careful what bank you're dealing with and what person you're dealing with, because it makes a difference when you go through a rough time and work out. It makes a difference on how you structure up front to make sure you're in compliance. There's just so many aspects of this that you have to dot the I and cross the T's in order to make it really work. And again, most of the public doesn't understand that. Now, the public has no idea that if you go to Bank A and they hold on to the loan and Bank B sells the loan, that you're not going to be able to, they're not going to be able to work with you.
Yeah.
And that would make a huge difference for me if I was deciding what bank I wanted to be at. But, you know, those are all part of the challenges in the program, the way it's structured now.
Yeah. Well, suffice it to say, I think it's going to continue to be an important part of what we provide at Enterprise and a great tool for us. For any of you that are interested in SBA financing, either as an existing business or a new business, you feel free to contact any of the relationship managers here at Enterprise Bank. If you have any ideas for future episodes or any questions, you can email us at insidethevault@enterprisebankpgh.com. You can check us out on all the major podcast platforms in audio format and in video format on YouTube. Chuck, thanks as always for the input.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.